I'm Sylvie Avery and welcome to Spirits Work, the show where we bring you interdimensional communication between our world and the spirit world. This week's show is going to be listeners' questions, and we do have quite a few already, but if you would like to join us with your own question, it's general questions, not personal readings style situation. We'd love to hear from you. And that's free phone in the USA and Canada is 888-815-9756. International callers is not toll free, but it's only a quick call. And that is 001-530-876-3222.
Oh, hi. I'm Mick Avery. Now, if you'd like to know more about us, or maybe even book an Akashic reading, we suggest you go visit our websites, which are at www.spirit-teaching.com, spiritsworkradio.com, and also at mcavery.com. Now, on our Spirits Work show, which is live, of course, on the wonderful and ever-present BBS radio at 10 a.m. PST, which is 1 p.m. EST, and at 6 p.m. GMT. If you'd like to know more about our work on Spirit's Work, we cross the divide between the physical world and the spirit world and discuss all kinds of things, not only metaphysical, but normal, everyday situations that affect us all and our planet. I'm a deep trance medium. And live on the show, I channel our resident spirit expert, Gregory Hay. When I'm in the trance state, I don't have any awareness of what's going on. When I'm not in the trance state, I don't have much awareness of what's going on. oh, dear. And anyway, with the help of our spirit friends and Sylvie, I have developed a method of being able to have a kind of instant out-of-body experience. I feel one coming on right now, which enables me to lend my body to the spirit communicator to use in a very pure way. And I think I'm just about to do that.
Okay, so, well, Mick's going to go off now any minute. That would be nice and peaceful for us for a little while anyway. And his spirit and his consciousness is actually taken to the spirit world, and he won't know of anything that goes on until he comes back into his body at the end of the show. Actually, we don't usually talk about it either, so he actually loses it all completely. He just says, was it a good show? And I say, yes, as always, and that's it, really. Anyway, Gregory will be joining us soon, and he is the spokesperson for a group of spirits called the White Cloud Group. He has brought together the many great minds of this group to form an educational collection of situations so that we can have access to as much knowledge and information that we can possibly get hold of in order to benefit ourselves, our earth, and everyone on it. And basically anyone who reads our books, listens to our shows, and obviously who is on a searching pathway. They've come with a mission to share their knowledge with us in the hope that we can become more aware of the nature of our existence and possibly inspired into making a positive difference to our world. So, like I say, if you would like to know more then you can go to www.spirit-teaching.com to find out more about us. Like I say, although this isn't a personal readings style show, we do Akashic readings with Gregory, and you can have one of those wherever you are in the world, on the phone or Skype, and we send you an MP3 recording or a CD, and it's all to do with your spiritual journey, you as a spirit being, the essence of what you're doing now, and marrying all this up to help you with what you're doing now, with the potential that you can bring out within you as well, to make sure you're going in the right direction and utilizing all your abilities that you possibly can, basically. So so that's that, really. And like I say, we're here every Sunday, and Gregory's with us now, so let's see what he's got to say today before we start on your questions. Oh, I'd just like to say as well that if you don't want to phone in, and not, you know, the thing is, it's usually interesting listening anyway, and you can email me your questions in the week or any time at enq@spirit-teaching.com, and I will ask them for you, print them out and ask them for you myself, which is what I'm going to do today. I've got quite a few questions here on your behalf. On the other hand, if you have an idea for a whole program, basically lots of questions about the one subject, then you know, I can do that too. That's what it's all about. The spirit world want to come to talk to us about things and enlighten us on things that we need to know, that we want to know, basically. That if it pops up in your mind, then we want to talk to you about it, because you can be sure there'll be other people that will be interested too. Okay. Hello, Gregory.
Well, my dear friend, hello, little bird. With love and light, blessings as ever.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Thank you. So have you got anything you want to say to begin today?
Yes, absolutely so. That is quite all right. Mm. The situation that we would like to begin with is that for those who have listened to us previously, we have talked about thoughts as being living things. We would like to address, first of all, at what time, at what point, at what event does thought become a living thing? What is thought before it's a living thing? Is it a dead thing? Is it a thing that's not a thought? Do we have another name for it when it's not a thought, or before it becomes thought, that someone else or some being or some animal or activity creates thought? All of these questions, you see, are really aimed at, in a sense, those of human beings are generally tending to think more about what a thought is or what thoughts are in the main, but they're only pertaining to the physical human life. The point we are needing to make here is that thought illuminated long before human physical life. And that in actual fact, each and every being of the spirit world can create thought. How is this, I hear you say, without the energy or without the possibility of having the physical brain? Because all that you consider within the physical regime of your three-dimensional space is that when you are looking at thought, or when you are trying to create something, you use thought which emanates from the brain being the vehicle of expression of how you are able to manifest things. Even when you are talking about perhaps reaction and reactive events to summary situations that come upon your life, is it thought that gives you the engine, that gives you the ingenuity to react to it? Or is it rather pheromonic expression? Is it perhaps chemical interaction? Or some other kind of energy wavery that you pick up upon? I have to say, my dear friends, these are indeed actually really very complex situations. Because in actual fact, you are a multidimensional being, that you could say that thought is a living thing before you've even thought it. And that the thoughts that are created around you or that you gain from ideas or expressions of other beings' thoughts are simply that. So they're reactive issuance. They are, in a sense, it's exactly the same as if you were reading a book and you're reading from a two-dimensional state. There you have it, a flat page upon your hand. And you observe it, and as you observe it, the syllables and the words create expression and resonance within you as a physical being. You may be one of those kinds of people who actually think as you are reading and think in parallel to the reading verse that you have, which creates other pictures or images which may run alongside you and help you to identify certain strands and situations, simulations of your own life experience, so that creates vantages of similarity which enables you to engage with the piece that you are reading. Sounds complex, but it isn't, because it's something that you actually drive at, that you gives you empathy, which gives you a sort of a togetherness with the being who has actually written the words upon which you are reading and focused. So all of this means that, in a sense, you're not just reading the words and the focusing of the expression upon the two-dimensional page, but actually what's happening to you is that you're creating a four-dimensional image of it. I say four-dimensional because partly what you are reacting to when you read the words on a page is your spirit's expression of it. Now, spirit, in the respect of your own physical life and consciousness, your spirit remains on the ether side of life, constantly within the ether world, never actually fully comes into the physical side of life. So that means to say that when I'm talking about your spirit's aspect of it, I'm talking about the resonant frequencies that your spirit creates as you read. And it gives you a kind of an energetic expression of it. It's a bit like, I suppose, enabling you to heighten your sensitivities. And when you become really empowered by a piece that you are reading, then what happens is it's the connectivity of your spirit noting your empowerment and then your raising of your vibration so that you're able to meet with your spirit head on, in a sense, enabling a very great raising of your vibration and empowerment in that whole sequence of events. That's part of the reason why it is that certain people who read certain books or whatever, they not only have the experience of the writer and what they have created, as in respect of a three-dimensional journey that they brought them to, therefore it means that you as the being, the spectator viewing it, you are looking at the words on the page, and that they mean something, fire something within your own sense of reality, even if you hadn't been there yourself, but as though you had been there yourself. And this could be a reality that's actually set in a completely different world. Nothing that you had ever expressly gifted of, or been able to excite the pheromones and the sensitivities because you'd actually been there. It's actually a situation which can happen voyeuristically on another world in a completely different galaxy far, far away. And in actual fact, what happens is it's bringing that world to you in a four-dimensional ethos. As so your spirit manifests to it because maybe it's had some corrective memories to do with that journey, or maybe had a similar journey and a similar understanding towards some aspect of it. So it fires all kinds of pheromonic activity to do with your physical mind, and you become quite empathic, and in a sense, your vibration can be so raised by certain things that are written, that you read, that your whole persona and vantage changes completely. And that's all from reading a few words. So where has this thought come from? You see? The point is, this thought is a living thing and sometimes may have come from your beautiful, pure spirit.
Yeah, well, we often prefer not to have pictures in a book, don't we? You know, we're right. often disappointed if we do when we're reading a story where we are actually conjuring up something within us. Even if you don't have a specific image of something in your mind, say a place or an animal or a creature or whatever it is you're reading about, even if you couldn't actually draw that, it's still there is still something that is there that you that you then, if you see a picture of the real thing, it's disappointing because you feel that it's I don't know, it's a feeling rather than an image that that you feel. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So that's the interpretation of your spirit then.
Yes, that's right.
But your brain hasn't formulated it into anything.
No, that's right, that's, because it doesn't have a configurator. Yeah. It doesn't have
It's a bit like you'll know it if you see it, but you don't actually know for sure.
But then you can sense it, and those sensing images actually turn into images.
Yeah.
Even if you've never seen it before.
Yeah, whereas if you actually sat down and connected to your spirit to draw this picture yourself of what it is that that is there in your imagination, then you would be able to do that, but it would come through inspiration, through this intuitive flow, wouldn't it, from your spirit, not from looking at the words again and reading it and saying, "Oh, well, this is how it goes. This is what they're saying in the book."
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So, and so when you're connecting with mind, what I'm saying is that the situation is that you have to understand that your spirit doesn't need mind, doesn't need intelligence, because it already is. It's already in the state of is. So therefore, in exactly the same way that different animals communicate to one another across species without actually saying anything, simply means that they're doing this through their spirit. They don't need the actual analog version of it when they're listening to a digital piece, you see? In a sense, in your understanding of it. So it's like, they don't have to come across as with an analog replay of the words or the descriptive statement that they wish to make. They give impressions, which may be in imagery, and they may well be in imagery of a spirit nature that doesn't have any actual real bearing to the animal itself in its own setting, but it still understands. That is because the language of the spirit world truly actually is evolved beyond language. So that's in a sense of that you don't have to have, it's not something that's created by mind, therefore does not have borders. It does not, is not confined in some way by only having a certain set of principles. Because it's governed by a completely different scenario. It was never that thought was ever formulated by brain. Brain is simply a physical analogy in order to enable facilitation of language and thought and understanding and idea, as well as the principles of motability.
Yeah, well, you must have thought that you wanted to have a physical life journey.
Well, exactly.
To actually be here anyway.
Yes, otherwise, so, even tadpoles, I understand, have thought.
Yeah, it's interesting. Very interesting.
So that's why, really, we wanted to bring this about as a sort of a soiree through the ideals of what thought is in relation to a human physical being. And then when you look at what thought is to do with animals in a sense of not like thought that as in English. Human beings have this funny little idea that animals always talk in English, or that they always talk in or whatever the language
you're living in. Yeah.
Yes, which is true to a point, but that's simply because it has to learn language as adhered to by a human being if it's that's what it's gauged by.
Yes, if you're interacting with a human, if the animal is interacting, then it would
that's
have to,
right.
Yeah, but you're
like horses,
yeah,
for
but
example.
You're saying their own language, aren't
but
you?
Their own language is something which is universal, and that they can speak from one species to another because they all talk the same language. And we human beings, when they come to have a physical life, don't.
But they don't all speak, they don't all listen to each other, though, do they? Because there wouldn't be...
Don't all listen to each other.
No.
Because otherwise you would have, when it is that elephants, for example, pick up the vibration of earthquake or impending tsunami or something like that, you would have thought that they would have voiced their urgency to all other beings, and therefore all other beings, including mice and rats and everything else, would all jump up upon the elephant's back in order to get out of the way of the impending tsunami or something else.
But what about imagination? I often look at animals and think, because at least we can imagine that we have to use our imagination to do anything, don't
yes,
we?
Yes, that's right.
So do animals have imagination?
They have different forms of imagination. They're not in the boundaries that human beings set for themselves.
And I know all animals will be different anyway.
Yes, that's right.
I often, you know, look at a horse or a dog and I think, and I wonder...
What is it thinking?
Yeah, yeah, if they can sit there and reminisce or, you know...
Yes. Do they think about their last meal and think those carrots or those peas tasted nice or, I didn't like that food very much. I hope they bring me something else today.
Yeah, because I know they're going to think about things that they like and then they enjoy food, exercise or whatever it is that they, you know.
And then more food.
Yeah. So, and all depending what dog it is, I suppose, with the exercise, really. But I'm always intrigued to sort of wonder what they're thinking, really.
Yes, well, the point is that they will be thinking in terms of their own relaxation and in terms of what they like to think of. You must remember that part of the expression of, for example, horses is that of their environment, and that they actually resonate with their environment. So that's something that's very important to them. And it means to say that when you are dealing, let's say, with horses, then the situation will be that they will perhaps like to have, if they have a mind, if they are intelligent in the respect of their breed or the way that they were brought into the world or the way that they have interacted with the world, enables them to have a different kind of consciousness and acceptability. That means to say that they may well have different functions of what they find acceptable or what they wish to think about. In fact, it may be that, for example, within the situation of your animal friend, horse, that the situation will be that he often actually thinks about the environment. Not in the way of they're hurting the environment, but rather just environment and the energy coming from it. You see?
Yeah, he's not thinking, oh, this grass needs cutting. I think I'll
need it. No, exactly. or there are too many brambles in this hedge. I must go and tell them. You see, it doesn't matter it's bramble. I like brambles sometimes.
Okay, well, that's interesting, very interesting. Okay, well, let's go on to our first question then.
Yes, very well.
And I'm trying to get one that sort of follows on quite nicely from that. And we will go on to, have you looked into the question from last week from Christopher in Oregon?
To do with
Queen Elizabeth I. Have you?
No, we haven't got
okay.
there yet.
All right,
it's
then.
Not to say that we aren't, it's just that we haven't.
Okay, that's fine. I didn't want to go through that long.
No, let's not.
Yeah.
Yes, quite.
Okay. Right. Well, we'll go on to this one then. And this is another Chris. It's Chris of Devon. Okay. Let's do this one. For someone who crosses over to the spirit world, who does not hold on to the attachments of human appearance, desire or patterns of thought, who wishes to go beyond that, do they simply become one with unlimited void without ego or identity? Or do they become part of some greater aspect of their spirit or God? What more is there?
What more is there? Yes. Well, part of what you have to understand is that the ultimate of what there is that your spirit is as much a part of God as God is of God. You see? So that means to say that when you aspire to become committed to the state of being, or is, what you are actually letting go of are all remnants of, not of self exactly, because if you let go of self, you don't exist. So self is not ego. It is wrong, therefore, to think of that if you are to become enlightenment, then in that enlightened state, you aren't going to let go of all atoms of self. Because when you are in human physical state, you are always going to look at and observe you in the first person. And when you are in the first person, you in the environment of. That means to say that for you, however, then to let go of that first person would be only for small amounts of time. Because time, the barrier itself, sets parameters of mind of simply because you're a living physical being that enables you in instinctive behavior to constantly reaffirm yourself. Self, you see?
But in the spirit world...
I'm just coming to that. So what I'm saying is that in respect of this, when you're reaffirming yourself in a physical state environment, then that's simply because of the barriers of that a human physical being is set to create for the provisions of self-preservation. When you come to our side of life and you are, let's say you've just passed and your spirit is not complete within the consciousness, but has attitudes, situations perhaps attached to it simply because of the resonance of your journey or the mistakes you've made or all this and all that, means to say that you have to, in a sense, overcome those differences, which maybe you didn't agree with at the time or that you have attitude over, so that they become not null and void, but so that they become understandable by your beautiful spirit and also by your consciousness. You must remember, dear friends, that when you come to our side of life, your spirit is the beauty of purity in itself, just like God, just like the creator of the universe, because it's a part of that infinite creation. So that means to say that in truth, when you observe your spirit or when your spirit observes itself, it will be in purity. There won't be a question of this ever arising. But what does arise is that when you come into our side of life, back to our side of life, then what your spirit is doing is it's wearing your physical life, your journey, your memory of it, your conscious attitude, your ability, your gifts, perhaps, that you tried to create with in your physical life. And if those attitudes had been successful in the physical life and you had managed to assign your vibration as a physical being to that of your spirit, then it means to say surely and truly that you will have created a kind of inner nirvana state, an inner knowing whereby all matters are profound and without explanation. Do not need further study. Do not need further questioning, further this, further that. But simply that you would embrace the art of being and never question it for that time being, for that period. So this means that we're talking about the illuminate consciousness and its possibilities. If your beautiful consciousness then became really beautiful and that enabled your skin to be almost semi-transparent and that actually meant that your vibration would ascend to such a state in its cycles and beats per second, over 800 or perhaps 1100 or 1200 beats per second, you would, in fact, be creating a vibration of yourself. So that would mean that when other beings saw you intends, actually, when you become, have little happiness fields in your journey, and you smile to yourself, and you laugh for no apparent reason or whatever, doesn't mean to say they're going to drag you off to the funny farm, but it does mean to say that your vibration is of a state whereby the pheromonic activity that's being illuminated is causing you to have these reactions. And this kind of happiness field is not, when you're in the physical side of life, in the ability to maintain it, simply because of the murky world in which you live. So that it means then that when you illuminate these passings, these situations, and allow them to develop in your conscious physical mind, as well as when they develop upon your spirit journey, when you are passed to our side of life, of course, it means that your consciousness is the coat that your spirit is wearing. So then, when you have illuminated through your physical journey all that is, and just glorify in the art of being without ever questioning or worrying over it or fretting, oh, look at me, I'm ascended or whatever, I'm an ascended master. No, you're not, you see. Then actually what's happening here is that you lose not the ego of instinct, but you lose the ego of persona. That's part of the reason why I say that when you have a being who says, I'm an ascended master, you instantly know they're not, because they're using persona.
Hmm.
You see? And yet, if you meet with Jesus, my dear friend, he would not say, hello, I'm Jesus, I'm an ascended master. You see?
Hmm.
It's so, just too incongruous.
Yeah.
Too.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just something that is held and kept within the physical embodiment, within humanity, because that's their persona of it.
Yeah. So basically, though, I mean, and I know that Chris isn't coming from a place of ego at all.
No, absolutely not. He's just questioning. Absolutely. Brilliant mind, too.
Yes. Yes. But say, for instance, you know, if he crossed over, like he says, for somebody who doesn't hold on to the attachments of human appearance or want to.
Yes.
Yeah, or the patterns of thought. Now, the patterns of thought.
But that's not to say that you hold on to them as a willingness.
No.
But what will happen, my dear friend Christopher, is that thought will hold on to you. Because you have to, when you come to our side of life, even if you're the purest monkey on the block, you will still be a being coming from the human physical history.
Mm.
Which means that it has borders, it has boundaries. Yes, there may not be too many of them, and perhaps there are just little willow sticks that are holding them there, and soon they break away, and you are free as a bird, you see.
Mm. Yeah, well, this is it. This is his point.
Yeah.
He wishes to go beyond that. This is his thinking now.
Yes.
Well, he's not even talking about him. He's talking about someone.
Anyone.
This, anyone.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
But, you know, so if you wish to go beyond that,
yes.
Although presumably it won't feel so much like it does here anyway. When
no, it won't feel so alien. And what will happen, in fact, is that your vibration, Christopher, when you are of the right status of vibration, that doesn't mean status as an ego, as I say. It means that you will actually be thinking differently. So the way that your thoughts combine with your spirit will just be like, in a sense, becoming so merged that you, in a sense, not lose your identity, but that it ceases to be important.
Yeah, well, let me just do an example here. Now then, am I right in saying that you actually don't bother with a body unless you are with others who have a physical body who you are going to be interacting with in the spirit
world?
That's
right, absolutely. Yes, yeah. I'm just a collection of energy.
Yeah,
now.
So, okay, well, let's talk about that then, because, you know, this is something that is new and, well, part of this question, basically, because
yes,
this is, you know, do you become part of something else, or how does that happen?
And I'm not part of something else, but I can be if I wish.
Okay, we want to know everything.
You see, so...
Well, let's go with the first bit.
Yes.
About how is it that you don't have a body, you are just an energy, unless you want to be.
Because I don't need the recollection of thoughts as living things of my conscious physicalness and how I looked. I reflect upon it occasionally, simply for matters of convenience, so that I may be able to illuminate a certain situation or something like that. But I don't need to reflect upon it in order to be me. Because me is my beautiful, pure spirit, you see. That doesn't mean to say I am regarding myself as some ascended being. But what I'm saying is that I've actually, after 300 years, I've let that go. And I don't need to continue to contrive myself around it. One might say, but you are Gregory Hay, constantly referring to yourself as coming from 1723. Yes, I'm aware of that, but that's just so that you have a parameter in the physical human world in order to understand where I have come from and so that I may relate to you in some way. I choose not to use the language of my time in English history simply because you wouldn't understand it. There wouldn't be very much point. I am really, in a sense, when I'm saying then that I refer to myself without body, it's purely and simply that is how I like to be because my remembrance of physical body was something of a kind of entrapment, really, because it was confined. It was a unit. You see?
Yeah. Well, you don't have a home either.
Have a home. I don't have a dwelling. I go back to. Mm. I don't have a bed to sleep on because I don't sleep.
No. Okay. So how does that happen then? Normally you are a collection of energy without a physical form. When you have to, say, for instance, go to the halls of learning and be with people, means that you have to have a physical body because you are doing something, or say, let's say you're greeting somebody who's just crossed over from our side of life, like you do.
Yes.
And obviously you're going to have a form then.
A meter and greeter.
Yeah, meter and greeter. So how does that happen? What do you do? Do you think a form, an age, whatever? I mean, I know that you can change style, clothes, colour.
Yes, of course. But that's really to do then with my thoughts as living things, as how I was when physical.
Yeah.
And I tend to refer back to that time simply because it's easiest. It's much simpler to do that.
Mm.
Because that's, in a sense, in my recent past, you see?
Yes.
So that means to say that I can bring this about very quickly, in milliseconds, in a sense, because thoughts are living things, they're actual. And I don't necessarily refer to other situations unless perhaps maybe, let's say, I'm greeting a horse or I'm greeting some other being. Mm. I won't necessarily presume that they may necessarily like human beings or even a persona of one. So I would actually create, because I have interacted deeply with horses from time to time, and I have actually on occasion taken on their persona, like within Shia has taught me a great deal. That's you're the being who walks with you, and that in that respect I understand Shia's energy very well, and it means that at times I could even bring that as a persona of myself. That doesn't mean to say that I'm then creating an illusion, but it means that it sets that being that I wish to meet on a level footing, and then they are more able to feel and understand my energy, and then I may actually move from being that being that I first introduced myself as, and then gradually and show myself, you see.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean to say that I'm playing some kind of game.
No.
It means, however, that I am regarding their energy and their persona because they may be frightened of human beings.
Yeah.
Or beings who were of that nature.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And like we say, we're not talking about enlightenment or ascended anything. But
no.
you can't do that unless you are of a certain vibration. You
yes,
just wouldn't
that's
be
right.
able to do it because, let's
that's
face
right.
it.
If you were a negative being.
Exactly, because we don't want people to think, you know, oh, well, how am I going to know, you know, the bad
yes, exactly.
guys from the good guys if everybody can suddenly turn into something else? That is not going to happen.
No, indeed not. So, no, it's not possible for that to happen because they don't have... basically, you have to have a different registry to understand and to be able to do that. And also, of course, you have to be able to manipulate the currency, in a sense. You have to become validated of your own intention. So that means your loving vibration. That means that you have to prove it first before you get given these, not abilities, but... understand the way that it works.
Yes. Well, it is a process of involvement, really,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it is. Absolutely so.
Yeah.
We can't get away from that.
No, absolutely not. But, I mean, similarly with the... what's the word I'm trying to think of? That when you can be in more places at one time?
Indivisibility,
yeah. So, similarly with that, I mean, that is something that... just evolves as your energy evolves, doesn't it?
Yes,
that
that's
you
right.
can be in more than one place at any one time.
Yes, simultaneously.
Absolutely, yes. Which you often talk about.
Yes,
that
and,
you do.
Yes, and at which time there is no time or no moment when you are not aware of all facets of self.
Oh gosh, and you being a bloke and all, Gregory.
I know. It's very difficult,
isn't
maybe.
It?
Multitasking in a virulent way. Yes.
Yeah.
It's
having
a body which contains thousands of viruses, and they're each and every one doing a completely different thing, having a completely different mood or hissy fit or whatever it is you see,
okay.
or dealing with these different energies that are. Really multiplicit and going in very different directions.
Yeah. So, well, this is the crux of his question was, what more is there? Well, this is what more
what
is there.
What more there is just... the same as your world multiplied millions and millions
billions
of times.
Billions of times, yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
So, but to get to this point, for instance, you know, what did you do? What did you... personally, I know as soon as you got to the spirit world from here, from having this experience, you literally straight away went into service in learning how to do this, basically.
Well, yes, and... because I found the whole situation so fascinating, and it was really the aura of the trees that set me off, because that was the first thing I ever saw.
Yeah, but you actually knew about it before you had the physical life as well, although it didn't...
But I didn't remember that.
It didn't
that.
Come to fruit, to, yeah, to
at
fruition.
The time,
no,
see.
At all. So this is it. I mean, it's not something necessarily that's only just started when you go back.
No,
from
absolutely.
Here, that's the thing.
That's right. And your physical journey may not actually have anything to do with what you were doing in the spirit world before you had the physical journey and what you then return to when you've had the physical journey. Mm. It may be that the whole situation is simply locked away and put somewhere else because it's a situation that you have to bring about or impart or some other way interact with at a different time or location of your spirit's journey.
So basically, it doesn't matter about... You haven't consciously really got to let go of any attachments of the physical earth life that you had. It's just they'll melt away with the process of you... your energy and your vibration in wanting to progress... be of service.
Yes, and coming
to
in
become
to understand
more. Yes,
that is actually possible.
Yeah,
and the depth to which it is possible—that's the other situation. That human beings tend to look at depth as though it's something just within their own psyche boundary. You see, that's my point. When you are happy, hippie, happy and smiley and glowing from within. This is just a minuscule situation, in a sense. That's not doing it down. It's not making it worth less. It is simply saying, though, that when you gain perspective beyond human intent, because human beings aren't really that great, aren't really that organized, aren't really that beautiful. Some are, yes, absolutely so. And many try to do their very, very best, and we don't take anything away from anyone.
No, and many more people would be more beautiful without the not-so-beautiful people in the world. So that's the problem that we have here, really,
that's
isn't
right.
it?
That's right, absolutely.
You know, like, for instance, there are the energy beings called the Shining Ones in the spirit world. Now, they, this is interesting, the part of the question that Chris says about becoming one with unlimited void.
And that's very true.
Yeah, but that's the nearest sort of description that I can think of, a Shining One, I guess. But even then, they do have names. And do they ever have a physical form? If they want one?
If they want one, but the point is that it's difficult to say when one wants one in respect when you're a Shining One, because it may not be a matter of the choosing. It may not be seen as a valid pathway for a Shining One to be in, because it means that you're putting much higher value upon physical life. I'm not saying that it isn't valued in the spirit
world. No, it doesn't have to be a physical form.
That's right.
Because presumably there's many Shining Ones that haven't had a physical life on Earth, or any physical life at all. But let's face it, some might have had physical life on other worlds.
Yes, that's
many,
true.
Many, many moons ago or whatever.
Yes, yes, yes. So, and many of these different forms, sometimes I suppose they are glibly arrived at as being, oh, you mean angels or something like that. No, I don't.
No.
I don't mean angels at all. I don't mean Elohim. I don't mean anything else that is to do with the physical earth language. Because these are beings that are, in a sense, even if they have touched physical human earth life or some other species earth life or planetary life, does not mean to say that that is how they think. You see, that's why, in a sense, I was saying about the structure of thought and how when you are human being, you think in human being. But that thought as living things actually really goes beyond human being. And when you come to the infinity of it, the real purity of it, it does not actually hold a specific identity originator. It is simply the thought and power of, oh, beauty. Oh, look, I feel beauty. You see?
Yeah, yeah. So some answers, when you get to a certain stage here, some answers you're never going to get because there won't be the words, the interpretation of words that we have in our English language.
Or for to human express understanding.
Or even, exactly. Because it's a bit like, you can't understand something that you don't know exists or even could possibly exist, you know, which is why we're trying to be so explicit in answering these questions.
Absolutely so,
Because, you know, of course, the other situation is, and I think I might leave this one for next week, but, you know, there's obviously, with having a life on another world, and what happens there, you know, I mean, here we are frightened of people from
other
the other
world.
Side of our planet,
let alone
from other worlds.
Yes.
So,
yes,
you know, there's that as well when you get to the other side is coming to terms with seeing beings that obviously have still got their form.
Yes, that's right.
But we'll talk about that next week because there's something specific for you, and I'd like to talk about that next week. So listeners will have to. We'll go into depth next week because
of course, little.
You've had existences on other planets, and we can touch a little bit on that.
Yes.
Because there's so many. There's so many things to talk about there. But let's just go back to this other situation. Right. When you take your physical form, when you decide to have a physical form, and you can decide what it is you're going to present yourself as, how do you do that? You just think hard or not think hard at all?
No, I just...
Just think it and that's it.
I feel hoarse.
Or what about...
But I can't do it if I haven't...
Already done
If I haven't already done it, if I haven't already been to the halls of learning, sought out horse, and perhaps asked one or two of them, may I, with the greatest love in the universe, become a part of you so I may understand your intricacies, so I may understand without threat or favour the way of your loving, the way of your kindness, the way of your giving and expression, without grievance, but with pure motivation. You see? Yeah. It's a loving gift.
Oh, beautiful, absolutely.
Beautiful. Yeah. It makes me want to sob uncontrollably when I think of the times that I have spent with Shia and your horse friend, and in the arms and the enfoldment that we have enjoyed purely and simply as spirit to spirit.
And whales
and dolphins and all different kinds of creatures.
So are you left with like a thought pattern or an energy or something that is always with you, that when you think of that, there's this connection, this ignition?
Yes,
it lights up.
That's right.
And this is what enables it to happen?
Yes, and because of the fact that the loving embrace, the loving energy between us at that time is something that's perpetual. So it never leaves me.
Yeah.
It is something that's become a part of me. And exactly the same for Shia or for some other horse person or some other dog person or cat person. It will be the same energy. That same entwining and enloving, really, which is, I suppose, without boundary. I'm not talking about physicality. I'm talking about the whole engagement of protection, of empowerment, of union, of understanding.
Well, it's love that we can only imagine.
Yes.
But we can't imagine, because we can only imagine it because as far as our human minds will allow us.
And it takes for that being of a different physical species or whatever to really understand your level of devotion to the cause, to the seeking, and your level of purity, because if there were any blemishes upon it, that simply would not happen.
So can it work the other way around? So we're talking about Shia, a horse. So
yes,
can Shia actually do the same for you? Do you swap, and does Shia then have the experience of what it's like to be a human being?
Shia has done the same with you on occasion.
Right. What, here or in the spirit world?
No,
before we came here.
No, my dear friend.
In
your journey here in the physical world, when you were meditating and you saw and melted with Shia, that was the experience that you had.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. And this is what people can do. This is what other people can experience, isn't it?
You see, and you're still able to speak, my friend.
Yeah, amazing. Yes. No, I remember him coming to me. I've seen him come. He's come to me when I've been asleep and I've woken up and he's been there just staring at me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Those beautiful eyes.
Yeah.
Almost like looking into deep space.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that at one state.
Mm.
That you felt like nothing on earth. Exactly.
Yeah, it wasn't. Yes.
You see?
Yeah.
That is that pure state of being that you gain in this kind of parity when you are dancing round a book or when you are dancing round an energy wheel that enables you to become at one with one another because you're communicating in a different field or a different vision.
So basically, you would, if you wanted, when you get, say you just crossed over tomorrow and you wanted to be of service, to learn as much as you can, you wanted to know all about the possibilities of the spirit world, the universe, we don't know, everything.
Yeah.
You would start maybe in the halls of learning.
Absolutely. And every time.
Yeah. So basically you would just ask. It's a bit like Alice in Wonderland.
Can you tell me where the library is, please?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
So you'd start there and...
And oftentimes it is the most innocuous place because it may be that you actually have to, that you're not going as the being that you are, but that in order to gain entry sometimes to the halls of learning means that you become as small as a bug.
Well, that's cheating because you haven't learned the tricks of the trade yet.
No, I know that, but you don't understand that that's what you have to do, but it becomes obvious when you see it.
Oh, right.
Oh, well, I'd never get in that door.
Ah, right. See? Oh, that's a good way to get you working.
That's right.
In the right...
Laterally.
Yeah, laterally. Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Beyond the thinking of the confines of human mind.
Yes, because as soon as you think then, well, I'd have to be this big, you would be.
Yes,
and
exactly.
That's how the mind
my
works.
Point.
Yay!
That's my point, my friend.
Fantastic. Got you.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly so.
All right. Well, let's hope. Okay, well, we'll move on from that next week, like I say. And
yes.
If anybody else has got any questions...
Yes. Yes.
Around this subject, you can email me at enq@spirit-teaching.com in the week or today, later, whenever. Well, thank you, Gregory.
With love and light. Blessings, little bird. God bless everyone.
Well, hope you've enjoyed the show. Our website is www.spirit-teaching.com if you want to find out more about us. Maybe have an Akashic reading with Gregory, whatever, or if you've got any questions for our next week's show. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for your question. Oh, who do we do today? Christopher and Devon. Sorry, Chris. My mind went blank. I'm Sylvie Avery, and you've been listening to Spirit's Work on the wonderful bbsradio.com. Until next time, be peaceful, be positive, and focused on your goal, knowing you're not alone in trying to create a better world. Goodbye.